As we gather in God's wonderful house, together as his children, let us go to his word and read what God has to say. In Psalms 84, we will read from verse 1 through 5. How lovely is your dwelling place, O Lord of hosts. My soul longs indeed, it faints for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh sing for joy to the living God. Even the sparrow finds a home, and the swallow a nest for herself, where she may lay her young at your altars. O Lord of hosts, my King and my God, happy are those who live in your house and ever singing your praise. Happy are those whose strength is in you and whose heart are in the highways of Zion. As we read in the New Testament, we shall go to the New Testament and the Gospel according to Luke in the 18th chapter from the 9th verse to the 14th verse. He also told this parable to some of who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and regarded others with contempt. Two men went up into the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee, standing by himself, was praying thus, God, I thank you that I am not like other people, thieves and rogues and idolaters, or even like that, or like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tenth of all of my income. But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even look up to heaven, but was beating his breast and saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his home justified rather than the other, for all who exalt themselves will be humbled, but all who humble themselves will be exalted. People were bringing even infants to him that he might touch them, and when the disciples saw it, they sternly ordered them not to do it. Thank you for the reading of God's word.
Thank you, Jerry. So in the summer of 1999, Kirsten and Naya and Micah and myself were in a car driving across southern England. They would hate if I'm thinking that I referred to it as southern England, from London, and we were working our way to Wales. We came to the Bristol Sea. Is it the Bristol Channel, Kirsten? And there's this bridge, the Prince of Wales Bridge. I wonder if it's now called the King of England Bridge. I'm not sure. We went across the Prince of Wales Bridge, entered into Wales. As we entered into Wales, we bypassed the capital city of Cardiff, kept on going past Cardiff, and we were looking for a sign that would direct us to a much smaller place, a place called Lantwit Major. We're driving along, we find the sign for Lantwit Major, we turn off off of the big M1 freeway, M4 freeway, whatever it is that the numbers that they give it, and we turn off and we head down to Lantwit Major, which takes us into those very scary roads in England, those hedgerows where you can't see anything and they're only one lane wide, but expecting two cars to come at you, and they're all driving on the wrong side of the road. And we're driving down these roads, and it's a little bit scary, but we have a place that we're getting to because we're looking for another sign, a sign for St. Donat's Castle. And finally, we see the sign for St. Donat's Castle, and we turn down the road towards St. Donat's Castle. St. Donat's Castle, built in the 12th century. It's a magnificent place. Chris, can you just throw up real quick so we can see what it looks like? That's not it. That's it, St. Donat's Castle. And as we are coming closer and closer to St. Donat's Castle, I look at my wife, and I look to the left because I'm now driving on the right-hand side of the road and very afraid. And I look to my wife, and tears are coming down her cheeks. St. Donat's Castle in 1965 became the home of the United World College of the Atlantic, Atlantic College. Atlantic College was born out of the horrors of World War II, when people looked at what had happened in World War II and said, there has to be something that we can do to build bridges of peace so that this horror will never happen again. And wise people came together and said, what if we can bring young people from around the world to one place? Regardless of their station in life, regardless of their economic standing, regardless of what their parents may or may not have done, we bring them in one place and engage them in rigorous academics, engage them in rigorous commitment to the community in which they serve, engage them rigorously with the creation, this beautiful environment in which we live in, and engage them fully in the work of justice and peace. Will not these young people become the ones who will build bridges for the future, to build justice and peace that if something like World War II might never happen again? And so they began, and they took St. Donat's Castle, and they turned it into a school, the United World College of the Atlantic, Atlantic College. First graduating class of 1965. In 1977, one 16-year-old, now I start crying. One 16-year-old American child, one of only two admitted to the school amongst 87 other countries, gets to go there. 1977, that's when Kirsten entered into Atlantic College. And in 1977, I am convinced that Kirsten, though she might not have used the language then, and even may not have used the language in 1999 when we were there on our way to her 20th reunion, there she found the dwelling place of the divine for her very presence. Jerry started our scriptures reading to us from Psalm 84, verse 1, how lovely is your dwelling place. For Kirsten, that place, in my mind, was her dwelling place. And as we came closer and closer to the campus, Chris, can you show me the next picture? This is a bird's eye view of St. Donat's Castle and the surrounding areas. As we came closer and closer to that space, she started to point out places, pointing out these fields over here, which were at one time common fields shared by the whole community where they grazed their sheep and where Kirsten was part of the service team that was housed here at St. Donat's Castle, that when it came time for lambing season, no matter the time of day, no matter the time of night, when the bell rang that the lambs needed to be delivered, no matter if you had a final the next day, you were called out of your dormitory to help bring those little lambs to life. And over here, you can't quite see it, are the cliffs that overlook the Bristol Channel there. And those cliffs were the place where Kirsten learned to rappel, learned to climb as part of the cliff rescue team. Because this is a dangerous part of the world and people get caught in there. And so part of her job being a student at the school was to be able to go and rescue folks. Because that's what it means to serve and be in a place. And up here in these turrets are the classrooms and the places in which she had that rigorous academics. The International Baccalaureate that we all know about now was founded and created in this place in the 1960s, now spread out all over the world. In 1977, when Kirsten came here to Atlantic College, there were three United World Colleges in the world by then. There are now 19 of them around the world with the same mission, to train and help young people to be the folks that will bring justice and peace. And it is here, in this place, and in these dormitories over here, with roommates like Irina and Isamar and Malin, with friends like Emeka and Shinji and folks from around the world, that commitment to peace and justice, that commitment to the environment, that commitment to loving and seeing the best in everyone was centered and developed and nurtured from my wife. Now, I can tell you, not everyone in her class had the same experience. Not everyone in her class would, for whom would this be the dwelling place of the divine. For in order for it to be the dwelling place of the divine, because the divine has no limits on where the divine can be, it's not going to be just limited to St. Donat's Castle or here at 1212 University Avenue. The divine is there in all places. For it to be the dwelling place of the divine is what happens with us as well. When we open our very hearts in humility and humble service, recognizing that where we stand at this very moment, there is something far greater than ourselves that is calling us. And it's when we respond in humble service to that call that that dwelling place comes together, where our very heartbeat matches the beat of the heart of God, where our very spirit feels the movement of the Spirit breathing through our lives and our world. For my wife, this place was the dwelling place of the divine that shaped her life and continues to do so. Each of us may have places. Not many of us have been to St. Donat's Castle. Each of us may have places. You all know me well enough to know that there are places around the world where I have been able to be in the midst of God's creation that have become my dwelling place of the divine. I remember at 19 years old seeing Yosemite Valley for the first time and my breath literally being taken away and feeling like at that moment my life pivoted from being a one who really enjoyed God's creation to one who was a lover of God's creation. And because of that, my life has shifted in profound ways in all those times. The psalmist, scholars would tell us, when the psalmist speaks of how lovely is thy dwelling place in Psalm 84, is speaking to a particular place. It is the very temple in Jerusalem. It is a pilgrim on their way in pilgrimage to Jerusalem, in which they are talking about how lovely is the dwelling place of the divine. This people that had been a nomadic people for generations and generations, finally at the time of King David, begin to totally settle and to come to a place, and Jerusalem becomes the capital of this nation, and David begins to build the temple so that the very presence of God, the ability to understand God's presence, is no longer carried in an ark from city to city, but actually has a place where that ark can live. David begins to build the temple. His son Solomon completes that temple. It's one of the great wonders of the world in that time, 2,000 or more years ago. Of course, hundreds of years later, it is destroyed by the Babylonians when the exile starts. And yet, three generations later, it begins to be rebuilt again by Ezra and Nehemiah. And yet, after that, the Greeks will come in and they will do their thing to it. And the Romans will desecrate it. And yet, at the time of Jesus, Herod the Great has gone into this amazing building campaign and has built this temple that Solomon completed to something even Solomon couldn't have imagined. But for those pilgrims, whether it was in Solomon's time, whether it in Ezra's time, in Jesus' time, those pilgrims coming to Jerusalem, that temple was a place that represented to them that which was bigger than themselves and invited them in humble service to enter into this faith with this divine who called them into this world. And I love how the psalmist says, even the humblest of creatures, the swallow and the sparrow, have a home in the temple. Even the humblest of creatures, well, the humblest of us, have a home where the divine is. If we allow that humility of heart to become a part of who we are. In Jesus' time, though, he tells a story. A story that we hear as a parable, but in all likelihood was indeed something that he saw. Walking by the temple. The temple by this time, the temple complex is so big. How big was it? If you were to stand here at Church of the Crossroads, walk up University Avenue to Dole Street, turn right on Dole Street, go all the way to Dole Street, past the round dormitories of the University of Hawaii, duck down into the quarry, past all those athletic facilities, and come back here. That's how big the temple complex was in Jerusalem, 40 acres in size. And yet, Jesus walks by this temple and apparently sees somebody who one would expect would be the person who would be most humble in the midst of this amazing complex that lifts up how magnificent and wonderful and awesome is their God, who instead is there on the temple steps saying, "Oh God, I'm so glad I'm not like others. So glad I'm not like those fornicators and those idolaters and those thieves. Why, God, look at me. I fast twice a week. I give 1/10 of my income. Oh God, I'm so glad I am me." And the kicker of this, because Jesus is an amazing storyteller, the kicker of this is the person who says this is a Pharisee. Now, we hear the word Pharisee, and Jesus has a lot of stories that don't paint the Pharisees in a real positive light. And so we think, well, all Pharisees must be hypocritical like this one. But in fact, if you were a Jewish parent back then, and your child said to you, "I want to be a Pharisee when I grow up," you would be so excited. You would be so excited because this would mean that you were going to be trained, you'd be educated, you'd be a scholar, you'd be a person who's going to put first and foremost doing that which is right and good is the primary focus of your life. So when Jesus tells stories about Pharisees not living up to that, it's to point out that in fact anybody can fall short, even the Pharisee. Because let's not forget, it is a Pharisee who breaks away from his camp that is in opposition to Jesus. And in the middle of the night, a Pharisee by the name of Nicodemus comes to Jesus, and Jesus talks to him about being born again. Is that same Pharisee who, when the Sanhedrin is trying Jesus that he might be condemned to death, stands up and defends Jesus. It is that same Pharisee, Nicodemus, who accompanies Joseph of Arimathea carrying the body to the tomb where Jesus will be. Not all Pharisees are bad. Jesus just uses that to point out that just because you have standing and stature does not make you therefore equivalent to being humble before God. That is something that you get to do. And he contrasts that to a tax collector. And believe me, there's good reason for people to have hated the tax collectors. Tax collectors were employees of the Roman government. The tax collectors were told, "Collect this amount for the Romans, and anything else you want to get for yourself, you go ahead and get it." They were the equivalent of the enforcers for the mob, breaking kneecaps and fingers and everything else in order to get whatever they wanted. They were hated and reviled for good reason. And yet it is a tax collector in chapter 19, the very next chapter in Luke, that Jesus will look at in a tree, Zacchaeus, and invite to come and have dinner together, and will challenge Zacchaeus to turn a life around in ways that we should all aspire to do. And as a tax collector in this story, that Jesus there on the temple grounds says, "Oh God, I am a sinner. I am a sinner." When we say that we are sinners, it doesn't mean that we are horrible people. It simply means that we have gone off path. It simply means that if we are marching to the beat of a drum, it's not the drumbeat of God's heart that we're marching to. It's a different drumbeat, and it is that tax collector who recognizes that the beat is off, that the path is off, and is calling himself back and asking God to help him to get back on path. That is a humble act. If we are to be the people, the individuals, the community that God has called us to be, if we want to make a difference in this amazing community, Makale, Manoa, Mo'ili, Ili, if we want to make a difference here, we best begin humbly. It's not about who we, Church of the Crossroads, what we, Church of the Crossroads, may do. It is about how we offer ourselves in service. If we want to make a difference in this magnificent state in which we live, with its incredibly proud history and wisdom and values, it is we who come before God humbly and say, "How can we serve the people, the Aina of this place?" If we want to do that in our nation, in our world, we are called first and foremost to come forward with humility. For it is when we are humble, when we open ourselves up to the divine, when we allow ourselves to see that there is something much bigger than ourselves that calls us to service, that is when indeed we move forward into what God has created for us. That verse that we love so much in this church, Micah 6:8, what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with your God? 1 and 2 don't happen without 3. And 3, walk humbly with your God, we will always know if we are doing that because we will be engaged in 1 and 2, justice and love. Let us be people seeking the dwelling place of the divine, where we can open our hearts to that which God has called us to do. Amen.